Pollito de lunes a jueves.
The Safari Park. You're killing me, Larry.
Hello, Larry.
Hats off to Larry.
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 Larry. Larry, get into bed now.
Is there no sweeter sound than that of your own name buried in cheers and applause? I think not. Well, listen to this. What do you think of when you hear that music? It kind of bugs me. Always has. I recently heard it on a continuous loop about 8 or 9 times as my daughter's class took the field in their caps and gowns. Again and again they played it. I was ready to go postal. It was 100 degrees, no exaggeration, sitting in the sun, in 100 degree heat for several hours. It was even worse for the kids. They had to wear those goofy costumes. Where do these things come from, that shitty dirge of a song, pomp and circumstance? Pomposity, well, no shit. And what are the circumstances? It's supposed to be about recognition of students' achievements. But like so much of what we endure in life, it's deeply, deeply layered in bullshit. As I looked around those bleachers, I saw bullshit everywhere. Except on the faces of those graduating seniors. Most of their faces were open, happy, with an undercurrent of amusement and anticipation. The kids were pretty great. It's the adults that needed work. The kids who will truly be successful will be those who can maintain that face and that attitude throughout their lives. I have a couple of stories for you that relate to that attitude, and I'll tell you about them in a little while. Now, directly behind me were the parents of a friend of my daughter. The guy is some hi-fi doctor, transplants kidneys or some such. And I know for a fact this dude is on more antidepressants than Amy Winehouse was. He is a profoundly unhappy guy. He's got a couple of banging homes, and he and Mommy drive matching Porsches. And if you ever need a kidney transplant, email me the name of your doctor, because if it matches this guy's, you don't want him working on you. Because nobody who is miserable ever does a good job at anything, do they? And so where was the bullshit? Despite how many participation trophies schools hand out, how many times they disparage the words judgmental and claim life is not a competition, or how many times they tell every kid that every kid is equal in every way, they still make it crystal clear that nobody on that field was equal. They never used the term valedictorian, but somehow it was the kid with the highest GPA that addressed the crowd. And the principal of the school got to open and close the commencement, and staffers and faculty either spoke or were thanked in a clear pecking order. And you know what? There is absolutely nothing wrong with that. Because those who achieve more, and those who give more, and those who shine brighter deserve more. More recognition, more appreciation, more applause, and eventually, more money. Somehow, our current society has conflated two very, very different concepts. Everyone deserves equal treatment under the law, right? Regardless of worth or race or religion, justice must be blind. But are we all equal? Fuck no. Is Bernie Madoff equal to Mother Teresa? Was Bin Laden the equal of anyone? Is some guy doing a podcast equal to the guy who spends 80 hours a week bent over a microscope trying to find a cure for some hideous disease? I think not. So where does all this "we are equal" bullshit come from? Plenty of it oozes right out of those same schools where there is as clearly defined a class system as in any society anywhere. Primates, canines, even some fish have hierarchies. That's just how the world works. So what a terrible disservice schools do in pretending this does not exist. Life is a continuous struggle from the gasp for the first breath to the last. In a civilized society, thankfully, those struggles are not to the death. Unless, of course, that civilized society should fall into even a temporary time of scarcity and a few meals are missed. Then just watch how fast people become uncivilized. As a kid in New York, I remember prolonged shortages of gasoline. An utterly artificial shortage, I might add, cooked up by our pals in the Mideast. And there were multiple beatings and even murders over a fucking tank of gasoline. Imagine how that plays out when it's a fight for food. Watch how fast civility turns to savagery when bellies are empty. But I digress. There was lots more bullshit beyond the faculty and stage. The parents, the my dick is bigger than your dick, my wallet is thicker than your wallet, my kid is smarter than your kid kind of skirmishes, couched in small talk, smiles, and pleasantries, asking one another where their kid will be attending college. It's fun watching their faces as they do the mental arithmetic of academic prestige. Then, the turning over of the cards in the poker game of parental status. Harvard? Oh, Royal Flush. Other Ivy League? Straight Flush. Top 25 ranked school? Four of a kind. Top 50? Full house. And so on down to 2-year community college. Barely a pair of deuces. So you might as well fold and hang your head in shame. What a crock of shit. I've said it before and I'll say it again, and I give not the slightest shit who I offend. No, that's not accurate. I say this with the intention to deeply and egregiously offend. I've known a bunch of Ivy League grads. Some of them were the dumbest fucks I've ever met. But what they lack in smarts, they more than compensated for in arrogance, which is usually rooted in the same foundation as all arrogance, nothing. I know a Harvard grad who worked as a telemarketer, and he actually shit-talked another guy who was a multimillionaire because the multimillionaire went to some no-name, non-Ivy school. It was surreal. But I suppose that's the warping brains undergo at Ivy institutions. And you all know plenty of dumb shit Ivy Leaguers. Lots of them lived at the White House. And so it's like some bizarro Paso Doble dance where the parents encounter each other, exchange niceties, and then comes the put your dick on the table question. Where is Melissa going to school in the fall? It's a nutty status showdown that makes pro poker look tame. Once the cards have been shown, there's usually a clear winner and loser, but if it's close, then these assholes will have to up the ante by mentioning some advanced program or prestige major their kid is pursuing. Pre-med, pre-law. And it's even funnier watching the loser attempt to feign delight in the other kid's success while mortified by their own kid's perceived underachievement. As if any of it amounts to a row of rat shit. Steve Jobs, Richard Branson, Larry Ellison, Michael Dell, Bill Gates. None of those guys finished college. The list goes on. But I'm not here to read lists. Why can't people just attend these things and relax and rejoice that their kid made it through high school, academically and in one piece? Only a week before this ceremony, one of their classmates had been killed in a horrific crash. You would think an event like that might alter some perspectives, give one pause, maybe cut back on the one-upsmanship. Is school even worth it? Some people are taking a more realistic look at the whole concept of college and wisely filtering out the prestige factor. A smart dude I knew years ago straightened me out on the whole prestige question. He was a good old boy from down Bama way, and I was wrestling with two job offers. One had plenty of prestige. The other one, not so much, but it paid a chunk better. He made up my mind for me with this statement. Larence, that's what some good old boys call guys named Larry. Larence, he says, Larence, you can't take prestige with you to the grocery store. Problem solved. So now, some people are evaluating colleges just like any other investment. How much does it cost, and what's the return on that investment? How much time do we spend sitting in and studying for classes and subjects for which we'll have no more use in our lives than, say, a cardboard bathtub? But once in a while, you get a teacher who is smart beyond the classroom, who knows his subject will be useful to a mere fraction of the students he teaches. So, in an attempt to make everyone's time worthwhile, he slips in some lessons that are not in the approved curriculum. If you run into a few or even one such teacher in your academic career, you are or were luckier than most. For me, it was a guy named Mr. Louis Petz. Screwy Louie was the name the kids gave him, but he was anything but screwy. He was older than most other teachers, probably in his 50s. Squat guy with a chicken chest and 120 decibel voice. He'd spent his first career in the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. He had built stuff all over the world. He knew what he was talking about. And not just for algebra, geometry, and calculus. He had life experience, and lots of it. Now, Louis was my high school algebra teacher, and at the time, I did a colossally stupid thing. I transferred my hatred for algebra onto him. First day of class, he kicks open the door like Godzilla and bellows, "Open those goddamn windows! This place smells like cocks and jocks!" Remember, this was an all-boys Catholic high school. Nobody moves. He looks at one kid and says, "Do it!" The kid had the place ventilated like an airplane hangar in 30 seconds. Everyone was scared shitless. Class was definitely in session. Mr. Petz was a take-no-shit guy, one of the best I'd ever seen. Kind of the anti-Dead Poets teacher type. He was a fountain of acronyms and mnemonics. He punctuated most of his rants by pounding a beefy fist on the desk with a force that might have shattered it. The desk he never sat at, he always stood beside it. He would bellow, "OTP!" And like a bunch of grunts at Paris Island, we were expected to respond, "Read the problem."
"S.O.P."
Boom, he hit that desk. Standard operating procedure. There was nothing interpretive about Mr. Petz's flavor of mathematics. There were no gray areas. Had he lived to see the utter bullshit that is Common Core, he would either have found its creators and slapped the shit out of them, or had an aneurysm and died of rage. And while he was imparting the secrets of algebra and plane geometry, he was doing some other things which, at the time, I failed to recognize or appreciate. There was a small but not insignificant segment of the student body known in New York Italian parlance as mamalukes, boys whose mamas thought they were God's gift. They were pampered, overprotected, over-admired, overrated, and usually overfed. Mr. Petz would often have guys to the chalkboard to solve equations. I dreaded those excursions, but even though I sometimes fucked up, he never gave me any static beyond pointing out the error of my reasoning. But I recall one day, Joey Genova, a quintessential mamaluke, was called to the front. As Joey stood there writing his methods, Petz eyes him from head to toe. Then he gets a malicious smile on his face and he says, "Mr. Genova, You're getting to be a bit broad in the beam. Have you considered throttling back on the gnocchi and ricotta? Everybody laughs, including Joey. But it was true. Joey was a fat ass. And if Mr. Pet said something like that today, he'd be fired, if not jailed. Was it crude? Definitely. Embarrassing? Yep. But it was also effective, because within a couple of months, Genova had dropped maybe 20 pounds. He was looking pretty buff. And on yet another trip to the blackboard, Pets did say to Genova,
Mr. Genova, looks as if you've trimmed some ballast from your caboose. Congratulations.
And Genova turned to Pets and told him he was right, that he had needed to lose weight, and he felt a lot better now. Nobody laughed this time. In fact, Genova got a round of applause. Pets's public embarrassment of Genova had made him a better man. Of course, every ethnicity has its own version of the Mameluke, and Pets, being former military, had doubtless seen a lot. And he used classic military tactics to help turn Mamelukes into men. Beyond the physical, Mamelukes were accustomed to having their life roads smoothed out by parents with money and influence. They'd fuck up, and instead of dealing with the consequences on their own, Mom or Dad would intervene to ensure that their Mameluke took no heat. Mr. Pets was hip to that bullshit as well. When he would give grades, he would intone,
Final exams are 1 week from Thursday, and if you fail this test, you will fail this class. There is no extra credit. There is no grading on a curve. You either pass or you fail, and attend summer school. I don't give a shit if your uncle's the Monsignor or your cousin is the goddamn Pope. Nothing can be done. Nothing can be done. Boom. The fist on the desk.
I passed Mr. Pets's class, and the guys failed, despite having parents with some influence. Pets was good to his word. He did not fuck around. As the months had worn on, my loathing for Pets diminished to a strong dislike and then to mere neutrality. Many years later, in my 30s, I learned that Mr. Pets had passed away, and the strangest thing happened. I got an instantaneous lump in my throat, and tears filled my eyes. It took me all those years to realize what a treasure the guy really was. Because life comes at you hard, and often as not, when bad shit comes down, nothing can be done. So we'd better have the stones to deal with hard times, or the foresight to take action that averts small disasters like summer school and bigger ones of far greater magnitude. And as I choked up and thought of Mr. Pets, I had the big realization. He was not teaching math. He was teaching life. On the flip side of Mr. Pets was a guy Patreon listeners know well, the Dean of Discipline, Doc. Brother James earned the name Doc because of the huge Doc Holliday mustache he sported and the quasi-gunslinger persona he fostered. And one of Doc's least favorite students was the world-class Mameluke, Tommy Amante, another guy known to Patreons who listened to the Revenge Trilogy. And those episodes are all still there for your listening pleasure, by the way. So one day, it must have been in, I guess, English class, Doc asks Tommy what he knows about homonyms, says Doc.
Hey, Amante, I'll knock a week off your detention if you can define the word homonym.
To which Amante answers,
Okay, Amante, it's obvious you don't know. This is a Catholic institution and we're all about redemption. A homonym is when two words sound alike but can be spelled differently, but with different meanings. If you can name a homonym, you can still get a week knocked off your detention.
Blue like the color, and
Did you take a stupid pillamante? Cause you just blew it. That's B-L-E-W, bright eyes.
Amante was really agitated. He was blinking his eyes fast and continuously.
Brother, can I have one more chance? Just one more, please, brother.
You know, Amante, you're no athlete with that big spaghetti belly you got, but maybe you're a sporting man, are you?
What do you mean, brother?
Gambling. Are you a betting man?
Oh, yeah, sure, I like to bet.
I got a wager for you. The entire month's detention. Double or nothing. The words principle, as in principle of physics, and principle, as in me, are a homonym. You give me the correct spelling of each, and no detention. If you're wrong, you won't see daylight until Christmas.
Amante starts to sweat. Big rivulets are running down his forehead. His armpits look like he pissed himself. Doc has a real sadistic, lopsided smile on his face.
Amante, you look distressed. I'll make it even easier for you. All you gotta do is spell one of the two words correctly. The principle that applies to me.
Doc looks at me.
Bleidner, you wearing a watch?
I nod.
Let's give Mr. Amante, say, 20 seconds on the clock. Go.
I stare at my Seiko. Amante looks like he's standing under a shower. He starts spelling like he's in a grammar school competition.
Principal, P-R-P-I-N. Brother, can you repeat the word, please?
This ain't a goddamn B, Amante. Spell a word. Bleidner, time check.
5 seconds.
Principal, P-R-I-N-C-I-P-L-E.
Doc smirks.
Bleidner, do you know whether Amante is correct or not?
I nod.
I understand you're fond of making various sounds, Bleidner, like some kind of human jukebox. What's the appropriate sound for Amante? A bell or a buzzer? Make the right sound, Bleidner.
I can barely suppress my laughter, but somehow I do, and I go, Amante nearly collapses. Doc looms over him.
The correct spelling, Amante, is principal, P-R-I-N-C-I-P-A-L. Easy to remember because the principal is your pal. I'm your pal. See in detention, gambling man.
Oh, and so what's the best way to game a system, school or otherwise? Because most systems are designed to crank out products, not people. Once in a while, we get lucky and run into a Mr. Petz. But if we don't, we really have to self-educate to some extent, don't we? Even on the job. The corporation's training is usually pretty feeble compared to what you can learn from some old hand who's been doing the job since Christ was a corporal. And so what about school, and specifically college? Was or is it worth it? Years ago, some guy had a best-selling book. All I Really Need to Know I Learned in Kindergarten. A snappy title, and not too much of an exaggeration. I would say that by second grade, I had absorbed sufficient knowledge to navigate the very basics of life. I could read, write, add, subtract, multiply, and divide. It's about all you really need in terms of know-how. Everything else is a springboard from those. But schools then and now, because I see them now through my own kids, continue to fail because all the emphasis is on imparting knowledge. And knowledge is not wisdom. Our computers, hell, our cell phones hold more knowledge than we do. But wisdom is another matter entirely. It would be great if schools taught classes in wisdom. Which of us couldn't use a course in, say, picking friends, real friends? How often are we disappointed, betrayed, or even screwed over by people we misidentified as friends? I did it a lot. My failing was infrequently picking friends that were fun, that would crack you up and keep you laughing. But are the good time Charlies going to be there when we really need help? Or have the guts and care enough to tell us when we're fucking up? On the flip side of that, how about a course in friendship? Maybe the task of choosing friends would be easier if schools cooked up a curriculum whose sole purpose was to help people set their moral compass. Of course, some schools make an attempt at this in so-called ethics courses, but they miss by a mile because, as with most of school, it's taught in theory, not in practice. For colleges, maybe they should ramp up the friendship course to picking a life mate. I never gave a shit what my friends looked like, but it sure as hell mattered with my girlfriends. When attraction and hormones enter the picture, it's a miracle any marriage is successful. Why don't they put some academic muscle behind that? How many guys can resist some pointy trophy chick, only to discover over time that hot chicks can sometimes be monsters? I've been lucky. And in real friendships, it's all about quality over quantity. If you reach your 30s and have 3, 2, or even 1 true friend, you'll be ahead of most of humanity. And as you age, you'll find you start shedding friends. Why? Because you realize you just don't have time to hang around with mere acquaintances. You want to spend your time with the A-team, with the people you love and that love you back. And what constitutes a really good friend? My criterion is this. A guy you've not seen in maybe a couple years, but you can call him out of the blue and say, "Hey, I need you to meet me on an entrance ramp at 2 a.m. tonight with 25 grand in a gym bag, and don't ask me why." I actually have a couple of pals who would do that. How do I know? I'm not telling. Or maybe my true and good friend, Cosa Nostra Tony Spumante, put it best when he said, "Larry, a friend is somebody that helps you move. A real friend is somebody that helps you move a body." Hey, thanks for hanging with me again at the dojo. It's great to be with you. We have a new sensei from the warrior class, Mike Pancho. He's a paratrooper, an airborne infantryman, and a no-bullshit dude. He's seen a lot and done a lot and is here to assist at the Take No Shit Dojo. You know, we have a small but growing audience among the armed forces, and of that I am proud and grateful. And it makes plenty of sense. They tend to be take-no-shit people, don't they? So drop us a line at thatlarryshow@gmail.com, and odds are Mike or one of our other many senseis can help you out. There's a kick-ass bonus episode just about ready on how you can create your own Superman. You. So don't miss it. I'll post it very soon. And it's summertime. T-shirt weather all over America. So get yourself an official TNS Dojo shirt. Go to thatlarryshow.com and click on the Dojo store link. And so, whether you are in the class of 2017 or 1957, it matters not. We salute you and your achievement. The fact that you are here with me right now is proof positive that you are a clear-eyed seeker of truth. And this is where truth lives, right here at the crossroads of madness and enlightenment. I'll see you next Tuesday, and until that time, take no shit.